You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
After ignoring them for the first half of his life, Theodore Cross has spent the past 40 years photographing birds. He's traveled through tundra and marshes, evaded rattlesnakes and KGB agents to catch the world's most beautiful birds at the peak of their action. The New York Times called Water Birds his gorgeous 344-page book, part visual encyclopedia, part memoir of a nearly half-century pursuit of birds. It's published by Norton Press, and I'm very pleased that it brings Theodore Cross to our show today. Hello.
Hello. I'm happy to be here.
Haven't you done a wide range of things on top of your photography?
Publishing and civil rights, yes.
And you also served as a governor of the American Stock Exchange.
That's right, just many years ago.
We're in politics? We served both
No politics.
Well, did you advise Johnson and Nixon on poverty issues?
Yes, after in the 1960s, I worked with Johnson and others in the old Office of the Economic Opportunity. You remember the old poverty program?
Mm-hmm.
And I developed a lot of programs down there with them. That was after an experience I had in Selma.
Where you got involved in civil rights.
Yes.
And you also played a role in President Obama's presidential campaign?
Yes, I had a website in which I had a number of people in New York who were terrific mathematicians, and they were able to calculate little pockets of information on various parts of the country where Obama could make progress and where he hadn't penetrated.
So we
worked on that in mathematical terms.
So how did you ever find time to pursue all the birds that you photographed?
Well, I've always worked alone, and when you work alone, you've got freedom.
You had many opportunities to become interested in birds before you did. They were invisible to you until they suddenly became
important?
Yes,
I was in the Navy for 3 years in the Pacific. And as you probably know, the islands of the Pacific, Kwajalein, Eniwetok, Ulithi, Hawaii, those places are loaded with birds. But I never really noticed. I was 18 years old at the time, and I never noticed birds. There was only one bird there was an albatross that would follow the ship.
That had other kinds of significance, especially sailors.
Absolutely. Sailors still fret about the albatross. And then there was a tern that used to sit on the yardarm of our ship when she was tired. But otherwise, she'd follow the ship for thousands of miles. So, but basically during that period, I didn't pay any attention to them. You know, we had other concerns. It was wartime, and there was no room for birds.
So what changed for you?
I don't know. You know, it's strange. I'm often asked that question, that we always assume it's cause and effect. But sometimes I cannot point to any distinct reason for it. The best reason I've heard was from a poet in Princeton, a very distinguished poet, and he said, Ted Cross has got skinny legs, and birds have skinny legs, and that's the explanation. Now, that probably is as good an explanation as any.
Well, there may have been a cause and effect that you have focused on water birds, and those are the birds you were ignoring when you were in the Navy.
Absolutely. That may have very profound significance. Who knows?
So is there something that qualifies a bird specifically as a water bird?
Yeah, a water bird lives on water and only comes to shore to nest or lives very close to water.
How many types of water birds have you seen and photographed? Have you counted?
I mean, total birds or total species?
Either. No, well, the species, I would say.
Well, species
say
would be probably 50
mm-hmm.
or 100, and the total numbers would be literally in the millions. For example, one island I spend a lot of time on is Christmas Island in the Pacific. Under ordinary circumstances, there's 5 million sooty terns nesting there in an area about equivalent to 5 football fields, and it's an incredible sight to see. So when you ask for numbers, you're talking about millions.
Well, the birds in the book are all quite beautiful. Is there something that distinguishes water birds and makes them more beautiful?
Just generally speaking, they have beauty. I really don't know why, but they have beauty, they have courage, and they're fantastic in acrobatics.
How close can you get before they fly away?
Depending on what they're doing, if they're nesting, you can't get close. So the ethics of the game I'm in requires you to use a long lens so you won't disturb the birds, and you sit in a blind often, wait patiently for something to happen. So if they're nesting, they're locked into the nest, and you don't want to disturb them.
Some of these photographs are of birds in trees, some in marshes. I'm assuming that you camouflage yourself and sat there for a long time to get close to them.
Yes, that's right.
You have to climb trees as well?
No. Well, once in a while, climbing cliffs, which I don't do anymore now that I'm 85 years old. But you often use a blind and read.
And they don't sense that you're there?
No. No. If you stay long enough, they get used to you. And they'll come back day after day, even though a blind is sitting there.
The different kinds of birds must have different kinds of personalities. What are some of the most notable characters, in your opinion?
The most exciting bird in my life is the red knot.
You say the red knot travels the distance from the Earth to the Moon by its seventh birthday. We're talking about great athlete.
It lives 7 years, and it travels from the bottom of Patagonia to the top of the Earth. In Ellesmere Island, which is about equivalent to the magnetic North Pole. And it makes that trip faithfully every year and back. And its young go back 2 weeks later after they're born. And it's a bird of great courage and great beauty. But the essential quality is determination and courage, which affects many of the shorebirds because they do on the whole, live in South America, but they breed in the Arctic tundra.
Well, in both cases, they're living in rather barren places. You have to wonder why they will fly so far to go from a barren place to a barren place.
Why do they leave? The reason, apparently, the best logical reason is, if you've ever been to the Arctic, the place is loaded with mosquitoes. They're huge. In Russia, my God, they're gigantic. In the tundra up there. And they're going basically there to feed on mosquito larvae and mosquitoes.
And so you shot them in the Arctic rather than in Patagonia?
Never in Patagonia. They're very dull in Patagonia. The red knot is a dull, mousy bird. You wouldn't recognize it. Worse, duller than a robin. When they get to New Jersey, which they arrive faithfully, earlier you spoke about competent people being faithful. Coming on time. They're faithful. They arrive around May 20th, and you can count on them. And by the time their feathers change as they're flying, and they become the most gorgeous creature in the world.
In 1989, you traveled to Siberia to catch a glimpse of the Ross's gull.
Yes.
Now, you were in Siberia at a time when the Soviet Union was on its last legs. Do you have to worry about politics as well when you're doing this sort of thing?
It was a problem, a special problem. Normally you could freely go to Russia, but Eastern Siberia is another story. The bird, the Ross's gull, nests in a very unusual place, namely the same place as the Russian gulags. And obviously the Soviet Union was very hesitant about having a photographer in the area, even though those gulags aren't as active as they used to be. So that the politics were difficult. I had to go with a KGB agent. The ornithologist who went with me, the Russian ornithologist, said, don't worry, when that KGB agent sees the mosquitoes, he'll go home. And that's true, just exactly what happened at Yakutsk.
So they live on the mosquito larvae as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes,
and also they're picking up stuff in the water of various kinds.
A recent article in the New York Times called that trip a failure. Do you see it that way?
Well, technically it was a failure. It was a huge trip, you know, from New York to London to Yakutsk, and then Kolyma. I don't know, 15 time zones, I think. So it was a huge effort. And I only saw one bird. And fortunately, the nest was destroyed when I came back the following day. And then I went home. You know, that was what I was there for. I went home. Within 2 weeks, the bird showed up in Baltimore.
So that's Baltimore, where you got these pictures?
I'm talking about Baltimore, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
No, I got one picture out there. But the bird showed up in Baltimore, and you can imagine what happened. 15,000 birders congregate within half an hour. You know, there's a hotline. The word goes out fast. People have their bags all packed, ready to go.
You say, for the compulsively obsessed birder, there comes a time when dreams will be satisfied only when they have seen the courtship displays of the Ross's gull in Russia. So you can get the bird in Baltimore, but it's not the same thing because
only a small number of people got the bird in Baltimore, and there he wasn't nesting. You know, birds are very active when they're breeding and when they're nesting. They dance, they fly, they pirouette. They behave in many ways just like humans. And they're much more exciting to watch at the nest than they are just to see them sitting in a pool somewhere.
And you capture them in all sorts of actions during courtship, when they're diving, even when they're fighting. I didn't know birds fought.
Birds are fighters. They're like Americans. They're always at war. It's really weird,
They invade Iraq and Afghanistan,
well,
birds?
No, not I'm talking about our birds in this country. What I'm saying is that if you look at a nest, you can't tell initially whether it's warfare or whether it's love.
Mm-hmm.
And they behave like humans in the sense they pretend to be in love, they pretend to be out of love, they fly away, and you say, oh, goodness, they're gone. But it's only what we call a circle flight. They come back to the same spot. So the great excitement of birds is in the nesting period when they go through all these wonderful antics.
Now, these photographs are all in color, and this book probably would not be as effective if it were black and white. Did you begin shooting in color?
Oh, I began in black and white. Actually, if you're photographing egrets, a white egret against a black background, black and white is really more effective. There are times when color is not as dramatic as black and white, but as you're right, I say 99% of these pictures are color.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned you're in your 80s, and you use
85.
And you use a walker, so you can't get around to the kinds of places.
Well, that happened recently. I fell out of a car and broke my hip and was in the hospital for quite a period of time. But whether it'll come back, whether my legs will come back, I don't know. I hope so. But obviously, it's going to have a profound effect on my life.
You have a website called Birders United.
Yes.
What do you do there?
I've had that for 5 years. I started that site 5 years ago. And what it does is it has perhaps 10,000, maybe 20,000 members. And what we do is report politicians who are taking money to give away wetlands. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, they're essentially being bribed by contractors to give away very important territory for nesting of birds. And it's usually wetlands is the issue. So we put out a weekly bulletin to people telling them how to vote. If they care. If they care about birds, we tell them how to vote.
And should they care about birds beyond
yes.
the fact that they're very pretty and...
Well, the world does not like
they wake
to lose,
us up in the morning.
Does not like to lose species. Very few people spend any time with my birds, which are the water birds. But we should care. We should care about the loss of any species.
Did you ever go back to the islands that you were patrolling during World War II to rediscover the birds that you were ignoring?
No, I never have. The only one would be Hawaii and Ulithi. Basically, not.
Well, the book has some gorgeous pictures, and we have a slideshow of images from it on our show page at wnyc.org. And I want to thank Theodore Cross, whose Water Birds is published by W.W. Norton, for being a guest on our show today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much.
We should point out that this is a large format book so that you get a full sense of just how gorgeous these pictures are.
Thank you.